quickly introduce him. It's really friend and colleague who needs to introduce him. Dr. Shumholz teaches Bible at Yeshiva University, and I reached out to him when we were learning about this whole first parak, which deals with a lot of overlap and intersection between the realms of Tumah and Tahara and the realms of Chet and Kapara. And I had mentioned some of those issues as we were learning it, but Charles was kind enough to give us his time and his wisdom to talk more systematically about how these areas relate in the Torah. So without any further ado.
Okay. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the introduction. The nature of Daf Yomi is that you're on a clock. So this is going to be obviously a crash course in sacrifices and biblical theology. I gave it a quick title: sin, impurity, sacrifice, and purification. Four nouns. I want to thank you for the opportunity, in particular because most of what we're going to learn today derives from the work of one man who unfortunately passed away about a month ago, Professor Jacob Milgram, Zichrono Livracha. His family, I believe, had some connections to Riverdale at some point. I know his granddaughter went to SAR. She went to high school with me. And really, he is instrumental. His work is instrumental in understanding all of this. And what's surprising, actually, and when I prepared for this, was that the when one reads the Gemara and when one reads the Chazal, and he operated by looking at Chazal and using them as a source together with other sources. The truth is that we're under. The idea that chatat and sin are somehow related is a misconception that is rather late in the game. Chazal seems to be pretty able to distinguish between what a chatat is and its connection to sin. And it took Milgram just sort of, to remind us of that and to tease out some of the implications, which is what I want to give to you today here. First, we have to the first thing we have to do is recognize a little bit about how the connection came about. Why is it that we associate chatat and sin? Well, the first thing we have to recognize is we're going to get there. Okay, if I had to answer at the beginning, the first thing I should say is let us divorce between chatat and sin. Okay, the word chatat can mean sin. Okay, there are cases where it does mean, where it can mean a sin, chatato asher chata, right? So clearly there is something to do with sin there, but the korban chatat has almost nothing to do with that. The almost part we'll get to in a minute, but so we have to remove the etymological, any etymological connection or any surface similarity between the word and the letters that are used to spell that word and the word for sin. The fact they all appear in the same combination should not confuse us too much. And that's an important principle in general. You know, the fact that you've got etymologically related words doesn't mean that when they play out on the floor or in the page that they mean the same thing. And so that seems to have been one of the reasons that, I would say the most important reason for why things got confused is this surface similarity in the language. The second thing is that, in fact, if you look at source number one, the first two sources, if there's any spare, pass them back forward. If not, let's just share. Their chataot are brought for sins, right? Korban chatat does occur for sin. So, for example, in Vayikra Dalet Gimel through Zion, I apologize for the lack of translation. Im haKohen haMashiach yecheta leAshmat haAm. If the high priest commits a sin with the consequent guilt of the nation, v'hikriv al chatato asher chata, for or on behalf of, right, the sin that he committed, kar b'makar tamim l'Hashem l'chatat. For a korban chatat, he offers an ox. And this is the list in Vayikra Dalet, which begins with that Kohen Mashiach, and then it proceeds downward from the entire Kahal, and so forth. It proceeds to in Pasuk Kav Zayin, which is the next entry. Nefesh achat ki techata bishkaga. Any person who sins, me'am ha'aretz, the people, we're just going to go with people, basota achat nisod Hashem asher lo teyasena ve'ashem. Okay, and he commits some sin that should not be performed, and he therefore ashem. Okay, I'm going to leave that shame also for the moment untranslated. But what's the point here is that at least if you read Vayikra Dalet, you wouldn't be wrong to say that a korban chatat comes for sins, right? Clearly they're saying you commit a sin and therefore you have a korban chatat. Okay. But when you add, one of the first things that Milgram tells you in any place that you look for him, and you can, the easiest way to find him is he wrote the commentary on Sefer B'Midbar for the JPS commentary series, the 5-volume JPS Torah commentary, or those of you who have access to more academic libraries, the Anchor Bible commentary on Leviticus is the other place. And it's actually in that second commentary where you find a lot of his writing recycled. And his writings have been collected as well. So you can find him fairly easily. I believe there's even one in Google Books somewhere. So at this point. So what he points out is that in fact, if you do the tally, you know, I'm not going to say numerically, right? But if you look at Vayikra Dalet and then you start looking for other chataot, you actually find that there are many more chataot that don't come for sin or for obvious sin, right? So, for example, at the initiation of the tabernacle service, at the initiation of the Mishkan, which is described in Vayikra Chet, okay, which actually relates back to the end of Parshat Tetzaveh and Sefer Shmot, you have a korban chatat, where you have a par chatat. This is Vayikra Chet Yudal Zedetvav, and Moshe slaughters it, and Vaychatei et hamizbeach, and he then mechatei et hamizbeach. And that's an important point. I believe Rabbi Linzer said that he may have mentioned this already. The verb lechatei in the PL, right? That form lechatei means simply to clean, to purify, to cleanse. Okay, tichateini be'ezov ve'etar in Tehilim Perek Membet. I believe it's not Membet. I think it's Nun Aleph. Sorry, 51. Clean me with an ezov, and I shall be purified. Okay, so lichate in, for example, here in Vayikra Chet, right, means simply to purify something. Now, so the court. Now, what needs purification here? According to this, what? The Mizbeach. So the Mizbeach is an inanimate object, right? It cannot sin. Okay? So it's obvious that the Chatat is not coming directly for a sin. It's coming to clean or to purge or to cleanse in some way. Okay? You need to kasher in some way. We'll get to that in a minute. Okay? Similarly, right? The famous, Mechusrei Kapara, what the Gemara calls Mechusrei Kapara, those who require Kapara, what does Kapara mean is an important point. But those people who are they? They are the Yoledet, the Zav, and the Nazir, right? Among other, those are the main ones. I believe that's all of them. But so, for example, the Yoledet, right? Before the rabbinic interpretation, which is not the main line, right, by the way, right. It's not the mainstream line, right? The standard line is she's simply a Yoledet, and she requires a Chatat, no sin at all. And we'll get to the rabbinic interpretation in a minute, which still preserves that point on some level. Similarly, the Mitzorah. We'll look at the Mitzorah in a minute. The second, and of course the Nazir as well. He also brings a Chatat. The Mitzorah, again, the Mitzorah is without the overlay of Lashon Hara, etc., which is really a rabbinic overlay. There's no reason to assume that there's anything sinful about what the Mitzorah has done. I'll leave the Nazir aside just to say that he does bring a Chatat again. Why he does it, we're going to get to in a moment. Excuse me?
And when is Nazir, he brings a Chatat and becomes Tameh.
Right, if he becomes Tameh, but that's nothing that he's done to right. Become Tameh, right? There's no sin of becoming Tameh, really. He's obviously, if he does it on purpose, we'll talk about what you do, okay, in a moment. Okay, so it's important to recognize that the Chatat, the association between Chatat and sin is not as hard and fast as we are used to considering it, or as it, by the end of today, we will no longer consider it. Okay. Let's talk about how this chatat operates. Okay. The mechanism is that the blood is collected and is sprinkled on some aspect in the mikdash. Okay. Never on a person. Okay? Never is the chatat blood sprinkled on a person. And that is an important point. Okay? In fact, let's look at the Mitzorah now. Okay? You have a combination of a chatat and an asham together. And you'll note, if I highlighted it for you, Haya echad chatat, echad olah. Lakacha kohen midam ha'asham, Okay, so the Korban Asham that the Mitzorah brings, that is the blood that is sprinkled on the Mitzorah.
Hmm.
Okay? The Chatat blood, okay, is, it doesn't say it here, but the Chatat blood is, a standard Chatat is sprinkled on the Mizbeach HaChitzon, on the outer altar that sits in the Mizbeach HaOlah, the one that sits in the courtyard that everyone can see, you know, as much as you could see anything. Okay? So this is a very important point, because the idea that the chatat is somehow a purification of the individual is also incorrect.
Hmm.
Okay, right? The purification of the individual or whatever goes on is not with the chatat. Okay, it takes place in some other way. Okay, and that is represented by the fact that the blood of the chatat is always on the mikdash, never on the human.
Hmm.
Okay, that's an important point. Okay. Now, which is getting us to, well, what's the point of the chatat then, right? If the chatat is not for the human, and the sprinkled never on the human, but is sprinkled on the mikdash, it suggests to us that the purpose of the chatat, at least in the level of pshat, is for the mikdash itself, not for the human. Okay? Now, so what are we doing with that? Well, we can look at... if we look at Avodat Yom HaKippurim, right? Okay, now, so the point of the Chatat is always Lichaper, okay? It always comes on, it always is Lichaper al somebody, okay? Now, the question is, what does Lichaper al somebody mean? That gets complicated only because you can Lichaper al somebody and you can Lichaper al something, okay? So you have to distinguish between Kapara Kuf Peresh, inanimate object like the Mizbeach, and kaf peresh on an individual, al an individual. And we translate the chaper al a person on behalf of the person.
Mm.
Okay, you chaper al an object on behalf of a person. Okay, so the purpose of the chatat is lechaper, and we translate usually to purge or to cleanse, kapara to cleanse, on behalf of another person. Which means, basically, right, well, if we kind of, let me just put it together now, the chatat is brought on behalf of an individual to cleanse the mikdash.
Hmm.
Okay? That is the point.
Hmm.
Now, we come back, so then we understand now Avodat Yom HaKippurim, the day of multiple kippurim, multiple purgations, okay, as follows. You have Shnei Tzirei Izim L'chatat. Okay? And he takes the blood, the Kohen Gadol takes the blood, and he brings it, turn to page 2, V'hiza oto al ha-kaporet V'lifnei ha-kaporet. He brings it all the way in. Okay? All the way inside. Right? This is the only time that you go all the way in to the, he goes behind, he brings it to the kaporet, lifnei ha-kaporet, and he brings it all the way into the kaporet, which is behind the masach, right? So he goes all the way through, right? And there's, of course, the whole avoda, right? And the whole mystery that goes beyond with that. But that's the only day, or the only time, right? Now, according to Pshat in the Tanakh, it looks like he could do this whenever it was necessary. Okay, at least that's the way it's been understood. It doesn't really say anything about, you know, he does it at least once a year. The question is whether he did it more than that. But we don't have to talk about that now, right? But look at it now. The Chiper al HaKodesh mitum'ot b'nei Yisrael. What's the purpose? To purge the Kaporet mitum'ot b'nei Yisrael for all these tum'ot that they have. Umi pish'ehem l'chol chatotam. And from their sha'im. Okay? So, now what's a pesha? Okay, a pesha is the only way we can, the way that Vayikra and other places to denote a deliberate sin. Okay, pesha is the term for deliberate sin. Okay, chet and things like that, avon and so on, are the ones that are undeliberate in one way or another. They require chataot as well. But let's look at the chart which I made for you here. This is based on Milgram's article, which he talks about, and I'll talk about this priestly picture of Dorian Gray in a moment. The Mishkan has a priestly picture of Dorian Gray. What does he mean? We'll talk about that in a minute. Okay? When we ask ourselves, first of all, why the chatat is brought. We've already talked about a few of the reasons the chatat might be brought. In other words, what action might cause the chatat. Separate from that, we have to ask, where is the chatat sprinkled? Most of the time, that's all the sin ones, right? The sin ones that individual sins individuals commit sins go on the outside. The Mizbeach HaOlah on the outside. if Kol Adat Yisrael, or the Nasi, or the Kohen HaMashiach sins, then it goes further. It goes inside. The blood goes into the, before the parochet. Right? In other words, to the Kodesh, what we refer to as the Kodesh as opposed to the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Okay? So you go in, a Kohen goes in, right, and brings it on Mizbach HaKetoret, which is outside. Okay? Which is sort of, you know, outside the inside, right? Okay? Right, level B. Okay? Finally, only once a year, or whatever, you go into the Kohen Gadol enters behind the Parochet and puts Chatat blood on the Aroner and the Kaporet. Right? And that's only Mipishehem Lechol Chatotam. That's the only thing that you need blood for in there. Okay?
So increasing levels of severity.
There is increasing levels of severity that require increasing levels, now, okay, so that there...
The tumor penetrates more deeply.
Well, right, well, let's get to, we'll leave the tumor out for a moment. Just the kapara is required more deeply, right? As you move, we're getting a very interesting gradation here, right? That a pesha of any individual... Right? Requires kapara all the way inside, whereas an inadvertent sin, and for whatever reason, of an individual only requires kapara on the outside.
Are you calling it sin anytime a chatat is needed?
No. I'm just saying that the sin causes the chatat. The sin that causes the chatat, I'm saying the chatat is required when a sin has been committed inadvertently, but the chatat is required only on the outside when it's an inadvertent sin. When it's an inadvertent sin but affects the entire community, that is, the entire community commits the sin, or the leaders commit the sin in some way, then a chatat is required in the middle, in the Kodesh, right, in the sanctum, and then the Pesha is, and Tumot B'nai Yisrael, which probably are the Tumot that they are not aware of for whatever reason. You have Stam Tumah, that's sort of floating out there. Okay? That goes all the way, and that's Yom HaKippurim. Okay. In addition to that gradation of what requires Chatat, there is a separate gradation, which is not on the page in front of you, which emerges if you look at the instructions to the Kohanim about how to prepare it. Specifically, who gets to eat this Chatat? What happens to the Chatat? Now, oddly, the Chatat has very little that is actually consumed. Okay? The Chatat, it has, the blood is collected and sprinkled, and then the rest is poured out. There is the Chelev that is put on the Mizbeach when it's offered. But the rest is one of two things happen. Either the Kohanim may eat it, or it's burned completely. There's no consumption at all. The distinction is actually fairly obvious, it's fairly plain. The chataot that are sprinkled on Mizbach HaOlah, i.e. those that for which kapara is required on the outside, i.e. the lower level, basically, right, the most common chatat, is the one that is permitted for the Kohanim to be eaten. Okay, so the Kohanim get their sop from the outer chatat. If, however, the chatat is required further in, then they may not. They may not consume any parts of the chatat, it's entirely burnt. So what's emerging is a system, right, by which you have kaparot required, you know, sort of progressively, and by which the consumption of the chatat is correspondingly varies. Right?
Things we're not seeing in Kol Mashiach, both of these they don't eat?
They do not. Anything that's sprinkled inside is not.
I just want to know what you mean by inside.
Inside the Kodesh, right? In the actual building, right? Where the stuff is, where the action is, as it were. Okay?
Is the presumption once the chatat is brought for Pesha that.
Yes, well, that's the point. That's where you get to the Yom HaKippurim, right? Mechaper, right? See, right? Yom HaKippurim, Mechaperim,
no,
and everything
question.
Else.
It happens, right?
It happens. Now, Milgram refers to all this as the title is the Israel Sanctuary, the Priestly Picture of Dorian Gray, and this is where you begin to get into, well, what does all this mean? Okay, so if Chatat is not there for the individual, right? We've established that you're not cleaning the individual, because in fact tumot, right, if you have normal tumah, if you do all kinds of things, you can, you know, usually the solution is what? For the person?
The mikveh,
right? You go to the mikveh, you wash your hands, whatever it is, right? You bring a chatat, and that's where the blood go for that? On the mizbeach, which suggests what? That the mizbeach actually requires kapara, requires some kind of purgation as a result of your, as a result of something.
Wait. I'm not so sure that, I mean, but every time you bring a korban goes mizbeach, you can't just say the mizbeach requires kapara. I mean, if I bring a mincha, you know, it's only goes.
No, but you don't sprinkle blood on the mizbeach.
Well, because there's no blood for a mincha. But,
well, that's the point,
but
right? The whole point
or is the
chatat, not in the same way. Okay, the chatat for the mizbeach is sprinkled very specifically in specific points, and is not, and is very, very limited on the mizbeach in terms of what it's actually brought. It seems as though the only reason you're bringing the chatat, this is a bigger question that you can look into on your own, the only reason you're bringing the chatat seems to be for its blood. That seems to be the point of it all, right? That the whole point is to collect the blood, sprinkle it around, and everybody who's associated with the chatat, this goes all the way to the para aduma, by the way, right, which is also a chatat, okay, becomes tamei immediately, right? Contracts tumah, any handling of it, there is some tumah associated with it.
Okay. You're saying he's not for the person.
V'chiper aleha, he on her behalf, he performs kapara because of her mekor damea.
Okay, but you're saying it's really for the.
V'tahera, that's the result, right? But the chaper v'tahera is the chaper al hamizbeach, and she receives tahara on her own for going to the mikveh. Right at the end stage, she gets tahara. Okay, but now let's what's going on now? Okay. So we have chataot that are brought for sin, right? So we can't say that there's no connection. So what's going on? That's where Milgram begins to think theologically, and that is, he says that the mishkan reflects the state of Am Yisrael. Okay, whether they are tamei in cases such as yoledet. Or nazir and mitzorah, right? That affects the mishkan in some way, right? That affects it. There is what he calls a miasma, right? The chet, and similarly with a chet, right? A sin generates a miasma, right? Which the mishkan attracts, right? Which it's like a sponge, right? And or the picture of Dorian Gray. I've never read the novel, but the picture changes, right? As he gets older or whatever.
As he commits more sins,
he changes, right? The picture changes. Similarly here. But how does it change? The Shekhinah begins to get uncomfortable, right? The Shekhinah cannot abide with Tum'ah. Now the grand theological moment for this kind of theology is that sin is what causes that. That human action is what causes this tumah. It's not some demons, and it's not only some kind of, you know, supernatural heebie-jeebie kind of thing, right? It's not like, you know, oh, I stepped on my mother's, you know, stepped on a crack or a mirror broke or whatever it is, right? There is some of that remains behind with the tumat yoledet and so on, but even there, right, that's all contact in one way or another, and this Hirsch was right, in contact with death in some way or another. There's some kind of, kind of death encroaching. Causes some kind of a problem for the Mishkan, that is, for God who lives in the Mishkan. Similarly, sin, human action, can do the same thing, right? And that's the brilliance of the theology of the Korbanot. One more minute. Okay, I see your hand. Okay? So, what has happened here is that the chatat, the purpose of the chatat is to restore the cleanliness, you know, the ability of God to live in God's house, right? When there is some sort of tum'ah, when there is a sin, right, the sin causes a tum'ah to emerge, and, you know, and most of the time that's just on the outside, right, a lower level. Now this is the lower level, right? The lower level is the sin causes a lower level of kapara required, right, which means that God, you know, the mizbeach ha'olah needs to be cleaned up, but there's a mess in the backyard, right? As you get, you know, as things get more serious, the mishkan absorbs more, or it absorbs further, right? The mess comes into the living room, okay? And then you got to really, you know, then you have to go all the way in. You got to do that, but that's once a year because you don't want to do that all the time because you know you all got to come into contact with, you know, the risk is a, you know, there's a risk benefit analysis you have to do here, right? How worth it is it to go in and come into contact and risk all of that going all the way in, right? You know, you got to make a cloud so you don't get seen, right? All kinds of things have to happen for you to go in there, okay? But the point is that the Mishkan is, the Mishkan, and i.e. the Shekhinah, right, is in vital relationship with Am Yisrael. The individual's action causes a direct effect on the Shekhinah itself. Yeah, your question.
It might be silly, but...
No, go ahead.
you clean any of this stuff up? I mean,
you mean physically clean it?
Yeah.
It was probably a giant mess. I mean, it was all this blood everywhere. I mean, no. Yeah, no.
Nobody's allowed to go.
It took Chazal to turn it into. No, look, the Reach Nichoach, I doubt, right? Certainly by our standards, very different. I doubt.
The idea is not to clean it up, right?
Yeah. No, nothing to do with. No, I'm using cleaning simply as a catchphrase, but no.
Spiritually
clean, right?
If you're sprinkling blood on a mizbeach and not cleaning it up, then it's added and cumulative.
Right. No, okay, right. Well, when you think about it in those terms, right, no, it's very easy, you know, ashrei ha'am that we don't actually. Right. No. Now, let me just finish up with. I mean, yes. If you think about it in those terms, we're going to have to, you know, we have to have a separate conversation about that.
I don't understand.
The yoledet blood. Okay.
The miasma of the shechina negatively affecting
right.
Okay,
it is on some level a victory over death, but there is much blood, as our Mialedet can tell us. There's a lot of blood that is associated with that comes from the same place as the Nida blood comes from. I mean, certainly in terms of an observer, right? Okay. Forget that. I mean, that's true too. There's an absence of venses and all of that takes place right afterwards too. But the point is that for in that theology, right? It's nothing to do with sin. There's a negative impact on the Shekhinah for skin disease as well, right? And, you know, like, right, for whatever skin disease it is, right? And it's not from Lashon Hara. I mean, in other words, right? Whatever skin disease it is, and whatever, there is also some sort of an association with, at least in the mind frame, and I would say, is somehow there is, together with giving life in this case, comes this loss of the life-sustaining placenta and all the blood that went with that. Okay, so that's probably what's going on there. But although I have no key into the ancient mindset regarding, you know, what was life and what was death, right? We have to accept, I think, on some level, that the science that they're talking about and the science that we're talking about is separated by almost 5,000 years and about 300 years of progress. Okay, so it may make us uncomfortable, but that there is some kind of death that is associated with it is, in my mind at least, not out of the realm of the crazy. Okay. I would rather not engage the debate any further than that because I just don't think it's. I don't really know if it's productive on that level. And I mean, I'm happy to stay with the question if you convince me, but I'm not. Doesn't keep me up at night.
Can you say something about the Seir HaMishtaleach? Like
Seir HaMishtaleach.
Spent sin in Atuma.
Again, the Seir HaMishtaleach removes those sins. Now you have to have a separate removal of the sin. This may occur the asham when you hear that verb ve'ashem, right before he brings the chatat. That ve'ashem, that feeling of guilt, right? That is what is the equivalent of washing your hands for tum'ah, right? There is a feeling of, you know, that you have to clean yourself either for tum'ah, that is with washing, or when you have a sin, you have to feel guilty about it. Now there are cases where you don't know. Right? If you don't know, then you can't feel guilty. Right? So that's what the Seir HaMishtaleach accomplishes. The Seir HaMishtaleach takes those sins, the Aharon puts the sins, right, literally, puts the sins on them, right? And then he takes them and takes them away. Right? If you don't know about them, and probably the Pshaim as well, I would imagine, all go on this Seir, it walks away, it may not be killed, by the way. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no evidence from the Tanakh that it actually has to be killed.
Right.
And it walks away, it goes into the desert, and whatever Azazel is, we'll leave Azazel aside. Whatever happens with that, it goes away. And that's the equivalent of washing your hands after, for example, or going to the mikveh after sex for Vayikra, right? Okay, you have to get rid of the whatever happens to you, but that's separate from what the chatat achieves, which is what happens to the mizbeach, or what happens to the mishkan. Now, just to give you some of the theology behind it, first of all, if you look at Sefer Yechezkel, the first 11 chapters of Yechezkel, Maaseh Merkava, okay, which is really where the Merkava is, not just chapter 1, it's the entire 11 chapters. You look at Vayomer Elai Avon Beit Yisrael V'Yehuda Gadol B'Me'od Me'od. The sin of Israel and Judah is very, very great. V'Timaleh Ha'aret Damim, the land is filled with blood. V'Ha'ir Mal'a Muteh, and the city is filled with injustice, probably. Vayetze kvod Hashem me'al mishkan habayi. That's the whole story of Sefer Yechezkel, is that the glory of God leaves the threshold of Beit HaMikdash. He gets on the Kruvim, okay, and that's the last pasuk there. Right, you walk out the door. Fly out the door. That's what happens. Right? God sits on it. He's riding on it. Okay, I know. But this is Pshat. Okay? And it stands, right? How funny. Vayamod petach shar beit Hashem hakadmoni uchvod Elohei Yisrael aleihem milmala. He's standing on the Merkava. They raise their wings. They fly off. Okay? So lest you think that this is anywhere, right? Yechezkel clearly builds off of this in one way or another. Right? The theology of Sefer Yechezkel directly built on this. Now, yesterday we read, even, I didn't bring the pasuk, but the extension of this is Eretz Yisrael is this grand mikdash. Right? And this, you see this in Masechet, I believe Masechet Midot, the first Mishnah in Midot, right? There's like, you know, circles of Tahara, that, you know, the first and then inside and inside, and inside, Kodesh, Kodesh, Kodesh. Same thing here. The land is in some sense a mini mikdash on one, some level, and the, when, so for example, in Yom Kippur, all the forbidden relationships that are enumerated in Vayikra Yudchet, Vatitma Ha'aretz, the land became Tamei, and so you shouldn't do this, at least Lo Taki Ha'aretz Etchem, so that the land will not throw you up, vomit you out, right? Kasher Ka'aretz Hagoy Asher Lifnechem, just as she has spit out or thrown out the nation before you, right? Your predecessors here in Canaan, right? The land can do the same thing, right? Can cause you to get out, you know, to have to leave.
Isn't there a comma between
Rashi Tamar
and
Ha'arim? No, whatever. I mean it. I just took it off the web. It's probably it reflect. This is their system of reflecting the Masoretic cantillation. It's nothing. I didn't get to pull it all out. You can go look in the Chumash. Right, they give you a whole key as to how to figure this whole thing out. Okay. And if you look at the last thing, I just wanted to show you that you know, Milgram points this out in various places. So, for example, for your case of the Yoledet, right? Okay. Well, first of all, let's look at the second one. Masechet Shavuot, which is what you were learning, is I think that's what Kohas Seirim, that is called Seirei Chatat, Kaparatan Shava Al Tum'at Mikdash VeKodasha. Right? It's the whole point of the Chataot is for the Tum'ah belonging to, right? The Mikdash and the Kodashi. Right? So it has nothing to do with you. Okay? It has only to do with you tangentially. Right? The main purpose of it is to get rid of the tumah.
Yeah, but you caused it, didn't you? By like being
you caused it, but that's, and you have to bring the chatat. It's your sheep in the end that's going to die. It's one of your flock, right? That's the, yeah. You did cause it, but that's nothing to do with what you need it for, right? What's that now?
They called it
tumah Israel. Right, they called it tumah. That's an important
thing. This was the communal ones of the Musaf, the Seirei Musaf. It's not, and Yom Kippur. This is not referring to the chatot of the individual.
True, but it may, I mean, first of all, in the Mishnah, but it does sound very generalizing.
Right.
For second of all, if you look at the Tumat Yoledet, the famous case of Tumat Yoledet, back to that case, this is in Masechet Kritos, and I believe it appears in Shavuot as well, which is probably where you got to it. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Yoledet Choteti, right? So he actually says that Yoledet is a Chotet, right? So he falls into a little bit into that trap of that, because she may have cursed or whatever, said that she won't ever have relations with her husband anymore, or whatever it is that the case is. But then the Gemara asks, Maika Lameimar, what are you going to say about, I forget what the whole thing is there. Ki kamaite korban, when she brings the korban chatat, le'ishtaroye ba'achilat kodashim hu v'lalacha para matya. Right? Taking the rabbinic notion of kapara here, meaning to atone for yourself, right? For a human kapara. The whole point of why is she bringing this has nothing to do with any sin she may have committed. She's simply bringing it so that she may then eat kochim. Right? Because she's got some tum'ah that has to be taken care of. Okay? So, again, right? Why there is tum'ah with the yoledet, I'm not going to go into. But that it has nothing to do with her sin, I'm willing to put something down for that.
So would it be fair to say that as far as the individual making himself one with God,
yes,
as it were, that when it's an intentional sin, there's, you know, you get karate or you get punished and you don't, there's nothing to be done about it. And when it's unintentional,
right,
it's basically about cleaning up the mess you made in the mikdash.
Yes. And when but tshuva occurs with the asham on some level. You have to know it, and then you the asham, right? You feel some guilt about it, right? So there is tshuva. He has an article on the theology of repentance, which is the asham part, right? When you find out about your sin, but then you feel asham, right? Then you feel guilt. That guilt is the hand washing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make yourself clean. But you also have to make clean you made a mess in God's house too.
And what's the function of the vidui of the chatat?
Because on the vidui on the chatat is exactly, you know, you have to specify why there's a problem in the mikdash.
Right.
You have to say that, bring it out into the open.
And is that for your sake or for the cleansing's sake?
I assume it's some kind of a connection between the two. Right. In other words, it's that lies at that nexus.
Uh-huh.
The chatot for Yom Kippur is vidui.
Right.
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 But furthermore, what I would say is that the psha'im, even the psha'im, where for which you have very little you can do, right? You got to wait for your karet, whatever that means,
mm-hmm.
right? There is still a mess in God's house, which has to be cleaned up, which is what Yom Kippur does. Okay, so you know, right? So there's a twofold issue here with a sin. There's an individual who has committed a sin,
mm-hmm.
who has done something objectively wrong by the standards set by the Torah, and separate from that, there is, and that individual requires some kind of personal catharsis, let's call it. Okay. Separate from that, there is also a catharsis that must take place in the Mishkan because it affects God. Okay. And that what that is, that's the chatat. The chatat is yes, the cleanup job on some level. Okay, a purgation job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes.
So in rabbinic theology, post-destruction,
yes.
these messes just keep piling up forever, and how's God get
prayer
clean? Prayer can clean, not just for the individual.
Well, there's no mikdash, you don't have to worry about that anymore.
In other words, is it a mikdash issue, or is it a God issue?
You still have sin.
But I'm saying...
And no, so then your relationship with God becomes much more abstract, because there's no place where you can say God is leaving. God's gone.
No, but the way you framed it, there was still an issue that... God just, the Mishkan still needed to cleanse itself.
Right, but then once there is no Mishkan,
does God not need to cleanse himself anymore?
There's no physical place to do it anymore. Yes, God probably, well no, so God doesn't need to be cleansed. God never needs to be cleaned. Right? God is not, God's home needs to be cleaned up.
Okay.
And that's sort of representing the fixing of the relationship with God on some level or another, but the point is that God's house needs to be cleaned up, right? It needs to be
perfect. Once there's no house, it doesn't...
You know, you have no problem anymore, right? On some level, right?
Gina, you should be...
What? Right? In other words, so on some level, I'm saying to you is that there may not all be that bad. And that's what I'm saying on some level. On some level, you know, come with Tisha B'Av next week, but the point is that on some level, it sort of removes that extra step that you can't do it. So from the rabbinic theology, we wish we could do it, right? Would that we could, right?
And since we can't, it's not a problem. The world still spins, and there's
yeah, the world will continue. That they can't deny. No, I mean, look, what happens to it? You can go look, you know, poke around Kabbalah. You know, from here to Kabbalah is not a big step, right? From here to sort of mystic thinking is, yeah, not so hard to get to.
So does the chatat though has two dimensions? Because, you know, because they were those that were brought for sin that you did,
yes.
right? But you say even though for the sin that you did, that it's really for the mizbeach. What about for the sin that you did? In other words,
the sin that you did is the
asham,
right?
No, but it doesn't bring an asham.
No asham. No, the asham has little to do with that all.
Right. So that's my point. In other words, so what's going to actually?
But the ashmat ha'am, right? There is some feeling of guilt on the part of the people.
Right.
That feeling of guilt takes care of the individual's problem.
So feeling of guilt will do it.
Yeah. That's tshuva. The beginnings of tshuva are embedded in this whole point.
There's still two types of tshuva. If I touch a carcass, I can't go into the Beit HaMikdash. If I sin, and I bring tshuva into the Mikdash through my sin, but I can enter into the Beit HaMikdash, although I personally have sinned.
True.
So how do you categorize those types of tshuva? I mean, do you think that they're radically different? Do you think...
I I don't think that they're so radically different, because you're contracting the tumah with a physical object, mm-hmm. right? Still has an effect on the inside too.
Right.
You still have to deal with it.
But somehow my sin only brings that tumah on the inside and doesn't.
But the tumah, right? But the tumah is b'nei Yisrael again, right? That may be what the Seir Yom Kippur is also taking care of.
Right. But you're just saying that my sin may get mikdash tumah, but doesn't make me tumah.
True.
But when I touch a dead animal, Sheret,
that
I
makes
become tumah, but not the mikdash. I would have to enter.
It does, but that's what that. But it only. But it probably just that accumulates over the year through Yom Kippur,
uh-huh.
and that's what the Seir does for Yom Kippur. So the whole tumah time. Uh-huh. I imagine. I think. Uh-huh. I mean, right? I don't deal with this on a regular basis,
right.
So I don't know for sure. No, no. But it has to. This Rabbi Linda's question is real. I got to work this all out.
Right.
But the point is, I believe the Pishei Ham, the whole tumah time. Right, where is it now? The Shikran according to Israel, Mitumot b'nei Yisrael, Mipishayhem the Chol Chalos. So the Tumot, I imagine that's the Tumot that we're talking about.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That you know that you
right.
that it's almost inevitable that you will come in contact with something Tamei. To require Chataot for that would probably be an immense economic burden.
Right.
So you probably have, you know, the sort of it builds up over the year, and everything is. And remember, Yom Kippur is not just the inside, right?
Right.
It's everything. Right, he goes in, he does the outside, he does the in front, and in all the way in. But he also does the outside. So I presume that's what's going on with that.
I see. I think it's worth mentioning in examples that there's two chatat that individuals bring, although they have no fault, which is a get, even in addition to Mechusrei Kapara, the
right.
talks about the Tinuk Shenishba, that somebody who's brought up never knew they were Jewish, and they're constantly doing sins, and they still have to bring a chatat, even though there's no personal fault. And the other example is when an individual follows the ruling of Beis Din, and Beis Din was wrong, but Beis Din isn't bringing a korban because it's not the majority of Klal Yisrael, the individuals bring a chatat, even though there's absolutely no fault because they're following Beit Din.
Right.
So that certainly reflects the idea that there's something metaphysically wrong that needs to be fixed, and it's not
right.
about the fault.
Right. And that's simply an extension of what we did at the beginning of enumerating the various chataot, that there are chataot that are not there for humans, first of all, and second of all, there are chataot for people who obviously have not committed a sin, including the Yoledet.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that concept, that there's something metaphysically wrong that needs to be fixed. I'm really struggling with trying to work out what that looks like in reality if nobody's allowed to kind of reset it or re-clean it. I mean,
okay, the particulars of
blood is very...
it's messy, yeah.
No, it's more than messy. It stains. It's there permanently. It's also not that safe in terms of biological fluid.
Okay, so...
I mean, and then you don't have... Nobody's allowed in to kind of...
It's the washing zone, once you're looking at
it. They do. There are mishnayot that deal with the actual nitty-gritty of keeping it clean and keeping it pretty. They do.
The whitewash it.
They do. Well, no. Well, that's not true. The aesthetic dimension is important in other...
Is to make it look bad? Is it to say, look at the accumulation?
No, you can't see it, first of all.
No, but it's just the life force. And somehow the putting of the life force is seen as this...
Now, remember that we have to... There are a few points I would...
The dirtiness.
I would make two points here. There are mishnayot that deal with how you clean up after all this, right? Like, in other words, how you actually make it look nice and clean.
There is.
Right? Yeah, there's discussion of this. You'll get to
the washing
it.
Sure.
Washing it and all that. They used to do these things, right? They obviously did not, you know, right.
But two,
we have to accept that we live in a very different aesthetic that has only emerged in the, I would say, over the past 300 years, when people started becoming aware of the connection between dirt and disease. Right?
Right, showering is new.
Queen Elizabeth I supposedly only took a bath once in her life. Right. Well, I don't know when she did. Well, one of them. Maybe it was her...
Once a month.
One of them, I think the queen, what's her name? Henry's wife, the first one. Catherine, I believe, was only bathed once in her life. In other words... We think of it as in a very different way, right?
Shaya, thank you so much.
Okay.
Shaya, that's really
terrific. I just wanted to.